All right, well, I'll get started. Thanks for coming to my last presentation on the Wolverine. This presentation is a little bit different. The Wolverines are really kind of a different animal. So they're in the Mustelid family, and Mustelids are river otters, pine martens, weasels, ermines, fishers, minks. That's the Mustelids. And Mustelid because they have musk glands that they leave scent all over the place. The Wolverine is the largest in the Mustelid family, the largest mammal in that family. And I wanted to read you. Has anybody seen this before?
What?
Wolverine? Wait, someone just
finished
reading it.
No, my presentation.
Oh, yeah, I saw it.
So, has anybody read this?
Someone was just reading it. Was it
What's
you?
The name?
I read it last month. It is a spectacular book.
Really?
Yeah.
So I want to read you the introduction or the foreword. Let's see, what is it?
Did you hear the name? Wolverine Way. Yeah.
It's the prologue. I'll read it. The author, is it the author, Chadwick? Anyways, when he says when he was 17 years old, he used to spend summers with his father, who was a geologist up in Alaska, way out in the tundra northeast of Nome, Alaska, which is way up there. And there was a hermit that was a miner that kind of prospected nearby where him and his father used to go in the summer. This hermit had sluiced these holes back into these dark tunnels where he was looking for gold. And but one day the boy, when he was 17, went to visit their neighbor, this hermit. And this is what he said. He said, "I studied the hermit's face below the cone of light from his headlamp, taking care to keep my own light pointed somewhere else so he wouldn't catch me staring at his face. His skin was striated with welts. The sections in between didn't fit together right. Some patches looked like dried out hamburger. The movements of light beams and shadows made the overall effect even more grotesque, as if his features were writhing about. I could understand why he preferred solitude. I had no way of knowing whether or not his appearance was what drove him to accept this level of risk while mining. Though young, I'd seen ordinary looking men do amazingly heedless things to follow a streak of gold in the ground. Still, the questions kept revolving in my mind. What was going on with this hermit? What in the world would leave a man with this wreck of a face? When we were alone and back at our camp, my father explained that he had heard that the man used to run a trap line in winter. One time, he caught a wolverine in a set of steel jaws and caved in its skull with a club. When you catch a wolverine, the first thing you want to do is, especially if it's alive, you want to make sure it's dead. So he clubbed it in the head with it, caved in its skull with a club. The man didn't want to skin his prize right away. The fur was valuable, and he wanted to do a careful job back at camp. Yet he was looking at a long snowshoe trip to get there. While wolverines aren't nearly as large as their reputation for malice and mayhem, they can reach 45 pounds in northern climates like that in Alaska. The easiest way to pack the carcass, he decided, was to tie the front legs together and then loop them around his neck like a harness so the body rested on his back. So he tied the front legs together, slapped it, and wore the wolverine on his back. The wolverine's paws, which serve as its snowshoes, are as broad as 120-pound wolves. Each paw has 5 toes with a stout, slightly curved claw up to 2 inches long. Suppose you put the foreclaws in a place around your neck and you haven't smashed the owner's skull as lethally as you thought. And the wolverine somehow fights its way back to consciousness while you're walking with its body still warm against your back. You too might end up hiding your face from the day in a faraway mind dark as the grave.
Wow.
All right. So, if we could hit the lights over to move on.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to cover a few of the stuff that you've heard before. Natural history, historical and current distribution of wolverines. I'll talk about ongoing research here in the North Cascades, and then finish up with wolverine conservation tips. Typically, like all the large carnivores, the bears, the wolves, and the cougars, there's this lore and myth about the wolverine. If you take a minute and read some of these, Outdoor Life magazine, even this one from High Country News. So there's lots of legends and folklore about the wolverine, just like there is with wolves and bears. Okay, so the scientific name for wolverines is Gulo-Gulo.
Wow.
And it according to the literature, that means glutton.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. There's one species of wolverine, and as you can see, they're circumboreal. They live in the northern latitudes, Alaska, Canada, Scandinavian nations, Russia, all in far north latitudes. One species. A friend of mine went to Mongolia to study wolverines, and it was a rough trip. If you're going to study wolverines, you got to like snow and cold.
Mm-hmm.
They searched for wolverines, came across a lot of wolverine tracks, never got to see one, a live wolverine. And they trekked around Mongolia on skis. This has absolutely nothing to do with wolverines. But I was flabbergasted. I had never heard of a Bactrian camel. This is it. I just threw this in there because it's a camel in Mongolia that loves the winter. It can carry 450 pounds, can produce 14 pounds of wool in a year,
wow,
and 150 gallons of milk. And apparently the Mongolians can eat them too. But I just thought, that's the strangest looking animal. So I threw them in there. Sorry about that.
No, it's very cool.
No. I mean, it's out of like Dr. Seuss. Okay. So the wolverine is the 5-toed mountain mustelid, 45 pounds of muscle and fur. It's surely the master of the winter wilderness. And everything I've read about it, it's a determined, unafraid, walking tank. Is the best way to describe the wolverine. Okay, largest terrestrial mammal, the weasel family. It has very distinct markings on its chest and throat. We call it the blaze or chest blaze. And I've got all kinds of pictures of the difference. You can identify individual wolverines by the blaze on their chest. And I've got pictures to show you that later on. Males are larger, and they can live up to 13 years, but in the wild, I think 5 to 7 is their average lifespan. They do have some significantly large home ranges. They typically can move 5 to 10 miles in a day, but they've been known to go 20 or 25 miles in a day. When they have their mindset on going one from point A to point B, they are pretty determined travelers. This is a wolverine in Ingalls Pass, which is just north of Cleveland, Washington. This is amazing to me. This is Glacier National Park. And this near vertical couloir was traveled by a particular male wolverine.
My goodness.
to go up and down over. This is the Continental Divide. And he used this route in the middle of winter and in the middle of summer. It's essentially like this.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. So they're scavengers. They eat a lot of dead deer and elk. They run around the avalanche chutes. When you're going up to up this trail up to Lyman Lake, you've got avalanche chutes on both sides. You've probably seen them if you've walked. It's those big talus slopes. That's the perfect place the wolverines hang out there looking for dead carcasses. So they're scavengers. Of course, they also eat squirrels, mice, other small mammals. They can, given the opportunity, they can kill a large deer, an elk. And they're so rare that I've never heard of a real human, unless you're a trapper or a hunter, I've never heard of wolverines really interacting with humans. They have very powerful jaw muscles. In the very back here, this last molar, on the inside, the top molar and the bottom molar, there's a 90 degree shelf on the bottom molar, so the bottom molar comes out, drops down 90 degrees, and the upper molar comes straight down like this.
Like a guillotine.
And it's just like that, just like a guillotine in the very back. So this is their denning habits. The females mature around 2 years old. They'll give birth at 3 to 4. I'll talk about their dens. They'll go into their dens and they give birth deep under the snow. The female raises the kids alone, although the father, the male wolverine, will come and visit every now and then, which is different than a cougar. The cougar male will never go back and visit. So there is a little bit of familial interaction. The young are born in February and they're pure white. They're as white as this background here. The females also have a delayed implantation mechanism, so they'll breed if conditions aren't right. Those embryos will be reabsorbed into the female will reabsorb them, and they'll never implant in the uterus based on her condition, which usually means that whether she's found enough food to fatten up. So they have that ability to delay implantation. So let's look at some of the dens. So there's a wolverine, and there's one of the dens, and then this guy here is standing on top of a den. Underneath him is probably 12 feet, 10 feet of snow. Wolverines are, they have to live in a snowy environment. If they don't have good snow in April, May, and June, they won't be they won't be living in that area, which means that climate change, if it's coming hard, climate change is really going to impact the wolverines, because as I'll talk about later, they're very snow and wolverines are very much one and the same. They're very much related. So they May to August. Talked about delayed implantation. So here's kind of like the grizzly bears. Unfortunately, those 2 to 3 kits, only 50% will survive the first year. There's a young wolverine.
Is that a person holding him?
Yeah. I've got some more pictures. This one's kind of not very good.
How long do they stay awake for, the babies?
Stay awake?
Stay white for.
Oh, yeah.
It's already changing.
Probably about a month and a half. When they emerge from the den, they're not white anymore.
Okay.
When they come out, after they've been weaned, they're a little bit about their tracks. If you see a wolverine track, it'll have 5 toes. They do not have retractable claws, so you may or may not see these claws. They are a characteristic, very characteristic track is this. This pad here is asymmetrical, and the 3 toes in front are usually closer, and then there's a space between the 2 outer toes. There's obviously a wolverine track in the snow, and they really can't be confused with anything else. The only thing you can confuse them with is wolf, lynx, a cougar, and a bear, because they're so large. Okay, so I'll talk a little bit about the historic distribution of wolverines. So,
do they have webbing in between their toes?
No.
In order to get around better, is it they're pretty furry?
No.
Paws?
They're big and they're furry, but no webbing.
Okay.
When the scientists in Olympia, Washington started their wolverine study here in the North Cascades, just a ridge or two, the first thing they did was look at historical records of wolverine in the literature, and what they found was that there was these inconsistencies about where wolverines actually existed. This guy in 1929 had them way down in Utah. There wasn't really a good indication of a good historical record. So they went and took hair samples and from museum specimens they came up, this is their historical record of wolverines from 1827 to 1960. And these are done by DNA and hair specimens, and also trapping records. They looked at trapping records. So this is pretty accurate. And even though this is all the way up until 1960 is what they consider historical, the reality is that a lot of these, especially in the southern part, these are recordings from at the latest 1910 or 1920. Mm-hmm. And make a mental note right now about how these are kind of isolated. So keep that in mind. Originally, scientists thought that wolverines were attached to a certain vegetation type or forest type, but the recent research point is now finding out that they require cold climatic conditions with lots of snow. And what so what they did is they looked at a map. They went back and looked at with some aerial photographs. They wanted to look at well, where is there consistent snow? So wolverines really need consistent snow for denning, and it, there really needs to be good snow in these months, February to May. So this is what they came up with. They found a bunch of climate models and some snow cover models, and this map shows areas where there is consistent snow. Well, if you want to get really specific, the dark blue is consistent snow for at least 6 years, out 2 to 4 years. All the yellow, of course, is areas where there isn't consistent snow in February through May. So in this, what they're starting to find out is that this snow cover is really, really important. And we'll look specifically at this area here. And so how does the snow cover relate to where the wolverines are actually found? Here in the Northwest, actually here in the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest, here's Lake Chelan. Right there's Lake Chelan. I think this is Wolverine Creek or Railroad Creek. But the dark red areas are areas that in a 6 year period or 7 year period had consistent, regular, consistent, predictable snow between April 24th to May 15th. Mm. So here in Washington, basically, this is really good denning habitat for wolverines. And if you want to break it down further, you can look at, well, okay, so where is there snow outside, maybe outside of May, but even lower at 2,500 feet, where is there still good snow? And this is, so the yellow, all the yellow is where that you can find snow pretty much in the winter from, say, December to March. And the reason that's important is because when a young male or female reaches 3 years old, they have to leave their den area and go find a new territory. And they need to be able to travel on snow. So even though this snow will disappear in at a certain time of year, it's still important to wolverines. This is a high elevation area north of Cle Elum. It's very similar to around Holden. And this is all high elevation, typical wolverine habitat. So now, the scientists decided to look at current wolverine locations. So from 1990, they analyzed data from 1995 to 2005. So trapping records, photographs, and now look where the wolverines are. This is what they found. They did not find any records of wolverines in California, Utah, Colorado. They disappeared from Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin area. And then these dates are the last known record of a wolverine in these states. So 1922 in California, 1921 in Utah. Although I have to qualify, like this one here, in 2014, a wolverine moved from the Yellowstone area to somewhere up here in Utah. In 2014, they photographed one.
Wow.
We didn't put it in here because we don't know if it was traveling or if it's it's going to be a resident wolverine. Likewise, In 2014, a wolverine traveled from this area and traveled 500 plus miles and stopped right here in Colorado. 500 miles, crazy. All right, essentially what they found was in the early 1900s, this population, it went extinct. What was here in the Sierras went extinct. If there were any wolverines in Utah and Colorado, they were gone by the early 1900s. And over here, they don't really know, but the wolverine disappeared. Why? They speculate just because, you know, loss of habitat and human incursions into their areas. This is key too, though, particularly for the Sierra Nevada. This population was so isolated, and because of the low reproductive rate, and there was no wolverine population to immigrate in, the Sierra population disappeared. They were extinct. They went extinct. They were geographically isolated over here. Okay, so then they went and looked at the genetics. They wanted to look at the DNA of the wolverines, and these are genetic haplotypes. And over here on the left, these are all historic wolverine hair samples from museums, for example, museum collections. And they took hair from all these museum specimens, genotyped it, and classified. These are the genotypes or haplotypes in historically. And then if you move over here, you can see that CA1 disappears, the CA disappears, all the O's disappears, the F are gone. The only haplotype that's left over here is A. So what they figured out that essentially, and I'll talk about C in a minute, what they found out was this shows that essentially the wolverine actually went extinct somewhere early in the 1900s in the lower 48. The wolverine disappeared from the lower 48. And these haplotypes, particularly C, those genes are matching coastal British Columbia and Alberta. So what's happened is, in the 1900s, we wiped out the wolverine, but starting in, I don't know where, we think really recently, 1960s, 1970s, the Canadian wolverines are starting to repopulate the Northwest. Because these gene haplotypes all match wolverines up in this area. So other than the haplotype A, all these guys were wiped out. So the theory is that, let's say, you know, by 1910 there were no wolverines here. They were gone. They looked at, this is the snow cover again, and do you guys see a pattern? The Northern Rockies shoots up here. The Cascades shoot up here. Well, this is the immigration of the wolverines in Washington. The C haplotype is migrating from this region, repopulating the Cascades in Washington, and hopefully they're going to repopulate Oregon and who knows about California. And then over here, the Northern Rockies wolverine, this is snow cover again. This is snow cover, so this snow cover is significant for the wolverines to immigrate. And they're coming down here and repopulating the lower Northern Rockies. Okay, so I'm going to talk specifically about the Wolverine study here in the North Cascades. What they did in 2006, they started trapping wolverines. They put radio transmitters on them, collected tissue sample. This is the study area of the North Cascades Wolverine study. This is the typical habitat. This is what you got to go into to go find a wolverine. It's not easy. These are actual trapping sites for the wolverine during the study. Obviously, these are all somewhat close to a road. There's large areas, like in the Pasayan Wilderness area, where it's just too difficult to go into, so there's no wolverine sampling done up there. How do they catch wolverines? They build this log house, and it has to be really, really sturdy because a wolverine will chew through these logs. They set up a transmitter, and as soon as a wolverine goes in there and this door shuts, this drops down, it starts sending a signal. And that's when the biologists need to run up, get on their snowmobile, run up and take the wolverine out, sedate them, and then do all their analysis. They bait the... This is inside the box. This is like a deer carcass. That's what attracts the wolverine. This is a picture of the scientist. There's actually a wolverine in there.
Not put my hand in
there. Yeah, and they're sedating him. They have a long pole, yeah. And at the end of the pole, they have probably ketamine. Yeah. And they poke it and sedate it, knock it out.
I still would not put my hand in there.
Here they are. It's been knocked out. They're taking it out. They put it down on a couple pads to keep it warm. They put eye drops in the eyes so the eyes don't dry out. They weigh it. They take blood samples. They measure the paws. I don't know if they do it, but when I trapped a pine marten, I would tattoo their upper lip.
Oh.
I would put a number inside their upper lip. And the reason I would do that is because they're putting on a radio collar, and particularly with wolverines, that radio collar isn't going to stay on very long. And so if you're doing a biological study and this wolverine loses that collar, say you trap it again, there's only two ways you're going to know if it's the same. The wolverine, you want an accurate count, so you either need to look at the chest blaze. Or in my case, with pine martens that don't have chest blazes, I put a tattoo in their upper lip so I could check and see if it was a marten that I previously caught. That way I didn't get skewed population data. Looks like they're putting on a radio collar there. Once they have the collar on, you take the sedated pine wolverine, throw them back in the trap, and then watch the video up here. You put the wolverine back, and then you step back and wait for him to wake up. Let me see if I can get this video to go. Where is my... There we go. You probably won't... I'll see if you hear the sound. Sorry, I'm going to do this. Where is my cursor? There it is. Yeah, that's being a little loopy. Okay. So here's a bunch of pictures of... These are all wolverines from the North Cascades study here, around here. And I have photos of Sasha, the Holden wolverine. But So look at that distinctive chest blades. Everyone is individual to the animal. This is Rocky. Rocky the male, which I'll show you his home range. I think he actually was Sasha's husband. But this is Rocky. This is Xena, female. Mallory.
Wow, look at that chest plate.
Isn't it beautiful?
Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful.
Okay, so the black line is Rocky, the male. Blue is Mallory. Red is Xena. And this is Sasha. You can see Holden is, where's Holden?
He's a pretty good swimmer, huh?
Holden is, this might be Holden, somewhere in there. Wait, that's probably Donkey Lake.
Right there, yeah.
So Holden would be here. So you have your own Wolverine, Sasha. And I'm not sure she possibly could have mated with Rocky. But you see, so the male will have various females in his territory. The male will fight other males and keep them out of their territory. There might have, this blue is Chewbacca, another male, but I think it was at a different time. So either Rocky passed away and Chewbacca came in and took his territory. Let's see, 2007. Oh, it was the other way around. So Chewbacca was first, and then Rocky came in. But look at how far Sasha traveled. That is, I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
Stahican's here. This is way, way up in Mazama Valley, up and over to Stahican, and up over these ridges, way the heck down to here. That's Lake Wenatchee. This is like Eniac down here. Okay, so here's Sasha. That's Sasha, and this is your typical run pole camera. You put a pole here, you hang up some kind of bait, and you set up these cameras to get pictures of them. And there's Sasha again. And you can see the radio call. And what they do, you set this pole up and put the bait out of reach. So then the Wolverine has to go like this to grab the bait, and you get a picture of the chest blades. I have some more pictures of that. This is just an example of Rocky the male. You can see he goes all the way to here, and he overlaps with Mallory and Xena. The blue is Mallory and red is Xena. And so the male has...
What are the stars there on there?
Those are natal densites.
Ah.
So these are where Xena gave birth, and this is where Mallory gave birth.
Okay.
And I have pictures of those sites.
Wow.
So there's Mallory's densite in the summer. In the winter, this is going to be under 12 feet of snow. Notice the rocky talus. This is what it looks like in the winter. But so these densites are under the snow. But what's under the snow that makes them attract, go to den there? Well, this is what's underneath the snow. So the snow piles up 10 feet. The Wolverine will go down, and then they have all these tunnels to go and move around in. This is Xena's natal densite in the spring, and this is what it looks like in the summer. So again, imagine the snow up to here. She goes down, and then this is a beautiful little den. And what's the temperature underneath there?
It's 50 degrees.
It's a constant, 45, 50 degrees. It's warm. So cover... In the summer, a cover is important for denning. They find these places where there's stacks of logs or rocks and den there.
If people go by the insights, will they return to it the next year?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. I'll find out.
Do they bring sticks and logs and stuff to build, or they just find something where?
No, they just find something. And also those, that slash pile and rocky terrain, it's also great, guess what, great habitat for mice and voles, pika. So there's actually there's a source of food until you eat them all. Outside, this is the study, North Cascades study area, but currently Conservation Northwest, and I think you guys did one camera here with those guys from Conservation Northwest. So Conservation Northwest has cameras all over Washington now, and you can volunteer to monitor a camera. They'll give you a camera, you set it up, and then you go check it every 2 weeks. So long-term monitoring is done by cameras and these hair traps. This is just an example of a summer monitoring. You know, they'll set a camera and a hair trap station every 100 square mile area. Here's a whole bunch of photos of different blazes on all kinds of different wolverines. This is an example of how you set up a camera. You set a camera on a tree over here, 12 feet away. You hammer in a thing called a run pole, and then you hang a bait here. Wolverine comes up, walks out on the pole, stretches out to get the bait, and then the camera snaps a picture of his chest.
Isn't there a thing on it too that kind of captures a little bit of hair?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's also, you can do just a camera, or you can do a hair trap too with a camera, or just a hair trap, and I'll show you the hair trap in a minute. So these are the pics. These are the chest blazes you get from those cameras. And this is a great way to count wolverines, because you're not capturing them, and you can identify individuals. So
oh my goodness.
Here's a guy, or female, I don't know, reaching for the bait. But look, this is like rare, no chest blades. Very interesting. This is a wolverine that doesn't want his picture taken.
Oh, so it's at the camera tree.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's not happy. he's you know, he goes, I didn't sign a waiver that you could use my photo.
Oh, okay. There's a bear.
So, the cameras that you set out for wolverines, they don't just capture wolverines. So, here we have a grizzly bear or black bear?
Black bear.
Black bear, big ears. No. Although that kind of a flat nose is just so.
Oh.
This is a bobcat.
Look at that.
Showing off his tail.
Yeah.
Check out these
little cubs.
Two little bear cubs. A mountain goat. So here's a good picture. These are gun cleaning bristles. You use them to clean the barrels of guns, and you put these on the pole. The wolverine walks up, he rubs up against them, and you collect his hair, and then now you've got DNA to identify individuals. So here's what he's going up there, he rubs into those things, and now you collect all kinds of hair and DNA samples. So really quickly, you should know that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, that's the agency that determines whether wolverines are going to be listed as endangered or threatened. In 2013, they listed them as threatened, and then somewhere around 2014, they reversed that. A bunch of conservation groups currently are suing the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service because they're claiming that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service did not consider climate change in its scientific data. So the conservation groups are saying you need to go back and reanalyze the existence of wolverines with climate change in there. They want it, conservation groups want it to be listed as endangered, which I kind of agree with because right now in the lower 48, the estimate is that there's only 250 to 300 wolverines in the entire lower 48 of the U.S. So this is a great cartoon. You know, businesses say that, you know, climate change, don't talk about climate change because it's bad for business. And here's the business underwater. That was that's my 2 cents political. Wolverine conservation, why did they disappear back in the 1900s? Mining particularly was a cause in Sierra, Southern Rockies. Of course, sheep and cattle grazing, trapping. Poison baits were significant with wolverines because wolverines are scavengers, so they go for the dead carcasses. Mm-hmm. And people used to try to poison wolves and coyotes, and they still do, and they set out these poison baits, and instead of killing the sheep or the wolves and coyotes, a wolverine stumbles upon it, and then the wolverine dies. So there's a bycatch or a bytake when you try, you know, when you're trying to poison wolves and coyotes, you're also going to poison other things. But you know, besides all the human interference, the low reproductive rate and the non-existence of no immigration, that's what really caused the demise of the wolverines in the Sierra. That's about all I have. I threw this in here. These are bison skulls that were collected. There must be thousands in there, but these bison skulls were to be used as fertilizer. Oh. So they crushed them up and used them as fertilizer. So what can we do? What can we do? You know, we're going to try to identify, you know, areas that connect wolverines. Try to avoid destroying more wolverine habitat. And then you personally, you know, join a local conservation group. Conservation Northwest in the state of Washington is probably the best one. They're the ones that have these volunteer cameras out there. You know, just become more informed. You know, watch and read all you can about these animals. These are just some of the groups that have funded the research here in Washington State. And that's all I have. Thank you very much. I'll take any questions. Can you hit the lights over there?
Do they come out of their dens at all during the winter then?
Yes. Yeah, the mother does. She has to come out to hunt.
Have any wolverine stories?
Oh, you know, no, but I have a pine marten story. Have you heard my pine marten story?
No.
I'll tell it really quick. So I was trapping. Pine martens are like weasels. They're like about the size of a cat. I was live trapping pine martens, and when we live trap them, we would inject them with ketamine and knock them out for about 15 minutes, put a radio collar on them and let them go. And pine martens are rare, so whenever you caught one, you really wanted to make sure you put a collar on them. So one day I was working over by Mount Rainier, and I caught a pine marten, in a live pine marten in a trap, but the road that I was working on was a narrow road, and you could only fit one car on the road, and they were logging up ahead, and my car was parked on the road, and every 5 minutes a logging truck was coming down, so I had to move. I normally, if there was no traffic, I would handle the pine marten right there. I would knock it out, weigh it, tattoo, and I would leave the car on the road, but I knew they were logging, so I had to move. So I grabbed the pine marten in its trap, which is about the size of a bread box. I picked it up, opened up the back doors of my Suburban, set it in there, closed the doors, went to the front, got in my car, and I started driving down the road to get off the main road. And I was driving down the road, and it's bumpy, and I'm going faster than I sure should, and I hear a big crash in the back. I hear this crash, and I thought, you know, oh no. I said, I'll be in really bad trouble if that pine marten gets out. And so I'm driving with one eye looking forward, because I'm looking for logging trucks, and I'm one eye like this, and I'm going faster than I should. I look up in the rearview mirror, and the pine marten is bouncing along the top of the rear seat. He's hopping along, and then he disappeared. So I'm driving along. He went off the back seat, under the front seat, and popped up in the passenger seat and jumped on the dash. So now I'm driving down the road. I'm going really fast, looking for logging trucks. I have a white pine marten.
Looking at you.
A weasel. And it's the cousin of the wolverine. Yeah. And their teeth are sharp. Yeah. And I know how mean they are because I've been trapping them. I know how vicious they can. Anyways, I'm driving along. The pine marten's on the dash about 3 feet away. And I have no idea. What do I do? So, like any good biologist, like actually person scared for his life is what I was. I'm driving along. I leaned over and I went, I tried to scare it. It didn't budge. It looked at me and didn't jump back. It didn't lunge. It just looked at me and dropped down and disappeared again. And now I'm thinking, okay, any minute it's going to come under my seat and grab my leg. So I got to a side road. I pulled off, parked, jumped out, and closed the door.
Now what?
Yeah. Exactly. And didn't you say they do a lot of scent things too?
So they have. So that's a good question.
And you hadn't sedated it at all?
No. It was totally. I hadn't had it. Trying to get to a side road so I could sedate.
Yeah.
So that's a good question. So I jumped out, slammed the door shut, and now I'm standing outside my vehicle, my radio, all my trapping good is in, trapping supplies are in there. And I'm like, what do I do? I thought for a minute, it was spring, so I had a big heavy jacket. I thought, okay, you know what I'll do is, when he's in the back, I'll reach in, grab my jacket, and then the next time he comes over to the seat, I'll open the door, throw the jacket on him, and grab him. I thought about that for about a minute, and I totally realized, like the guy in the book, do not try to, anyways. So what I did was, I grabbed my radio, this is the funny part, and I called my partner who was on the next drainage over. But these Forest Service radios broadcast through a repeater to the whole forest. And so I called my friend Jim, I said, Jim, come over here, I need help. Because he had all the other trapping supplies. He was on another trap line. So he could come over and help me trap it in the car. So I got on the radio, I said, Jim, I need your help. He gets on the radio and goes, oh, what's the problem? I get on the radio, I said, Jim, just come over here, I really need your help. He goes, what's the problem? I said, I got on the radio, Jim, come over. I don't want to say, I've got a live marten in my vehicle. I'd be the laughing stock of the force. Everybody that's out can hear it. I mean, so while Jim was refusing to come over, he got back on the radio and he goes, what, are you stuck in a ditch? I'm like, no. He's like, do you have a flat tire? I'm like, no. He's going through all these, are you hurt? I'm like, no. I'm like, Jim, just come. I need you. And so while he's driving over, I sat there and I had time to think, what do I do? I waited till the Pine Martin got on the front dash. I went back, opened the doors, grabbed the track, reset it, and closed the doors.
Uh-huh. That's smart.
And lo and behold, I thought there was no way he would go back in. 30 seconds later, the Martin came back, walked right into the trap, and the doors closed, and I had him.
That's amazing. Wow.
I was totally in love. I was so lucky.
The janitor comes.
What? Oh, yeah, Jim came. But he laughed.
Yeah. And told everybody.
Yeah.
So, Elijah and I wanted to know, we both want to know how you tattoo it.
Yeah.
So there are there are just little portable tattoo. It's
like a pen.
It's like a pen.
Yeah.
And it runs off two AA batteries, and there's a pen with ink and a little needle. So
you just put a random number, or you had a certain scientific.
Our numbers were like 201.
Okay.
205.
So you're putting three numbers on it.
At least three.
Oh,
numbers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Gus put a heart with mom through it, right? Put a heart with mom in the middle. Yeah.
So,
are Pine Martins white when they're born as well?
No.
So what would I have seen this winter from crawl onto our porch in the middle of winter?
An ermine.
Yeah, completely white.
An ermine. Okay. Yeah, the ermines are about this big. Because they turn
weasel kind
of. Yeah, they turn completely white.
Okay. And we had a pine martin in the village quite a bit this winter.
Yeah, pine martins are great. Yeah. They're all around. I've seen the traction in the winter. So one last story, unrelated, but I want to tell you one last wildlife story. Because if you were in my wolf talk, you heard about the wolves talking to the ravens.
The ravens, yeah.
So
yeah.
I was cross country skiing up by White Pass. And I was skiing along, and I came to an opening by a lake, and then there was a treeless slope with no trees on it that came down to the lake. And I stopped, and I noticed there were four ravens at the top of this hill, and I think there might have been one at the bottom. So I stopped to observe the ravens, and I got one of them at the top of the hill. He's like, and he stands at the top of the hill, and he rolls head first, and he does somersaughts down the slope.
Oh,
he gets
God.
To the bottom, and he's like, ka, ka, and the other ones are like, ka, ka, ka. Another one flies up, top of the slope, hops over to the edge, ka, ka, ka. Head first, rolls over, and somersaults down the ridge. They kept going up. They were just having fun. And they were talking to each other, like, ka, ka, look at me. The ravens are the most, they're in the corvid family. Magpies, ravens, gray jays, stellar jays.
Yep, you got
intelligent, intelligent birds.
There was some, I think, video that I saw on Facebook or something where they would take, there was some like plastic lid that they had, and they were on a roof, and they the lid up, and then stand on it and slide down.
Yeah.
And then they take it back up and slide down.
Because I have a question about why would people want the wolverine pelt?
Just why would they want it killed?
Pelt. No, why would they want the skin?
The pelt.
Just to have it?
You know, that's a real good question because I was at the Smithsonian. Because I went in to examine wolverine pelts and their teeth, their skulls. I wanted to take pictures of their skulls. And the wolverine pelt is not soft.
No.
It's pretty darn thick and coarse.
You don't make a hat out of it or a muff or anything.
Traditionally, I had read decades ago that in the north, like in Alaska, the wolverine fur was used around the hoods of the parkas because breath frost wouldn't form on it like it would on other furs.
I know that they would, they actually would combine wolverine pelt with, say, other pelts, and like you said, maybe if they were making a coat or a pant, the wolverine pelt would be at the part where, you know, it's abrasive or something. But their pelts really are they're coarse and thick, and they're not soft. But oh, by the way, wolverines can only be legally trapped in Montana. It's the only state where you can legally trap them.
Were there any in Montana?
Well, there are very few. So what's interesting is Montana allows wolverine trapping, but here's the really funny thing is there's a limit of like 3 for the whole state. It makes no sense to me why they would even have a trapping, allow trapping if you're only allowed to take 3 to 4 wolverines. Anyways, thank you very much.
Thank you.